What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. I'm Sebastian Salas. Our special day, it was almost 4 months ago that the Champions League was halted back on March 11th. But now, finally, Friday, it is back in action. Four round of 16 matchups still to get sorted over the next couple days. A doubleheader on Friday that includes Juventus and Lyon. Of course, the French side holding on to a 1-0 lead after the first leg. Manchester City and Real Madrid, meanwhile, they'll play in Manchester. City holding a 2-1 lead after their victory in Spain in the first leg. For more, we're joined by Ale Moreno, Frank LaBeouf, Don Hutchison. Frank, I'll start with you. Let's start big picture form. Since the restart, who has been more impressive, Real Madrid or Manchester City?
Definitely Real Madrid. I mean, they didn't lose any game. They won the Liga. They seem to be very compact, played together with a very optimistic and positive way of thinking games and willing to win every game. With a talented Zidane, who knows exactly what to do with the players. We seem to be very done before he came up and took charge again that team and they won the Liga. So they find they I think they feel very up for the competition of the Champions League. Now they have to score 2 goals. They're not good off leading the game, so they're going to wait for Manchester City to do so and counter-attacking. And the biggest problem is they're going to miss their captains. They're going to miss Sergio Ramos. I think, for me, the best player in Real Madrid.
Ale, Rodri, the midfielder for Manchester City, has said that they have a better team. Is he right?
They had a better team had this game been played when it was originally supposed to be played. Let's not forget of how impressive Manchester City was against Real Madrid in that first leg. And that the 2-1 result was actually the best result that Real Madrid could have hoped for, because Manchester City were far better than Real Madrid and really should have and could have won that game out for a lot longer than what they did. I really think that since the restart, what we have seen for Real Madrid has been truly impressive in really recognizing who they are as a group, being very comfortable with their shape as a team, being a team that, yeah, they're not as dynamic as you would want them to be. They're not as open as we all, as neutrals, would want them to be. But they are very effective, very efficient. They know themselves very well. And they're very much at peace with the fact that it's a team that is going to defend first. And it's hard to think on those terms when you think about Real Madrid. But that's indeed what they have become. And let's not forget about the player that Karim Benzema has been for Real Madrid this year. He has, over the last couple of months, really taken this team on his shoulders and be the real source of offensive productivity. But in Hazard, if you're going to go to Manchester and score at least 2 goals, he has to be at his very best. And I think we can all agree that he has not been at his very best consistently for Real Madrid. Before the restart, after the restart, before pandemic, post-pandemic, they need him to be the player that they thought they were getting when they made that choice.
Frank, we don't know what Pep Guardiola will do, but my question to you is, what should he do? Should Manchester City play the same way they always do, or should there be a more conservative approach considering it's a team with a lead?
Well, difficult question to answer, but I think it's you don't chase your nature and the nature of Manchester City and the way that Guardiola sees football is getting the possession, you know, attacking. Whether you want away from home and you should only maybe stay at the back and pay counter-attack. I think those players don't know how to do that. First and second, I think they're not strong enough defensively to play like that. So it's better they attack. It's better to have that positive attitude going forward, because if they score 1 goal or even 2 goals, because 1 goal is going to be the same. Real Madrid will have to score 2, but 2 goals, which is more than possible for Manchester City, is going to be almost impossible for Real Madrid. So I think don't change your nature, play like you know how to play, and see what's going on.
Don, wouldn't that play right into Madrid's hands?
No, but I think, Seppi, I think if you're Guardiola, he'll never change. There's not a chance that Man City will sit back and try and defend a 2-1 lead. It's not going to happen. It's not in his nature. I don't think the players that he's got would particularly enjoy trying to do that. It's not in their nature neither. I can't imagine if you asked Bernardo Silva and Raheem Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne, although they would do it because they're team players, you wouldn't then get the best out of him. Like Frank said, if you're Man City and you're Guardiola, you drum home to that group of players that you get the first goal in the game, that more or less kills a tie. Frank's right. I mean, the chances of Man City scoring two, you'd say, are pretty good. Can then Real Madrid get then 4 and 5? Highly unlikely.
One player we haven't mentioned yet, Gareth Bale. That's because Zidane is going to leave him home for this match. Here's what the Real Madrid manager had to say about Gareth Bale. Quote, he's a Real Madrid player, and I respect that. He preferred not to play. That's the only thing I can tell you. Ale, we've heard a lot of back and forth between these two, but these seems pretty serious. He's preferring not to play?
And if you're sitting on the fence in terms of what you feel about Gareth Bale as a player, and you didn't quite know whether to take the side of Real Madrid and Zidane or Gareth Bale, when the player himself allegedly says thanks but no thanks at this stage of the competition and this caliber of player with that sort of talent, he's saying, no, I'm turning my back on the team. I'm turning my back on my teammates. I'm turning my back on my career. I'm saying, no, this is not important enough for me. I just have to say, you know what, regardless of what the friction and the sort of the mistrust and the lack of relationship and fractured relationship that there is between the player and the coach and the player and the club, at some point, you as a player, the one thing that you can control is, hey, I'm available. I'm here. I'm ready to go. It's your decision if you don't play me, but I'm here. You don't ever take yourself out of the selection process. You don't ever take yourself out of the possibility of playing, and you don't ever turn your back on yourself, your teammates. You don't do that. You don't turn your back on the locker room. And when you say, I don't want to play, that's not for me, man, that says everything you need to know about Gareth Bale, and none of it is positive.
Don, there's a lot of context around this situation, but is there any defending Gareth Bale?
Not if he's said what he supposedly have said, Sebi. I mean, listen, I've not checked Gareth Bale's Wikipedia, but I guarantee you at some point it says on there a professional footballer. Now, if you're refusing to play, and listen, I've had 11 clubs over in England, and I've had some moves in my time, but not once have I ever said to my manager, I don't want to play. And you play for Real Madrid. You know, you're playing and you've got the potential to play in the Champions League. You know, this is a guy that's scored 2 in a Champions League final. He's won Champions League. He's won a ridiculous amount of honours since he's been at Real Madrid. Now, I understand and I get he doesn't get on maybe with the manager and the fans just can't take to Gareth Bale. But if you want the fans to take to you, play for the football club. Don't come out and say, you know, if that's what he said allegedly, that thanks but no thanks and I don't want to play in the Champions League. I don't want to play. I have never heard anything like in my life, Sebi. I find it so wrong because Gareth Bale, from what I've heard from people that I know and they know him, they tell me he's a stand-up guy. He's as honest as they come. He's a professional. This is not being professional. It doesn't look good.
Frank, we know in the past, despite the issues between them, Zidane has used Bale in critical moments. Surely he would have loved to have him as at least an option in this match, right?
Yes, of course, and it's been shown during the time that they shared together that Bale could have been a big part because I remember that he scored a fantastic goal in the Champions League final. But that's what it is. I mean, there is a human being, which is a coach, who decides, you know, whether you're going to play or not. And you sign a contract, and you know you're not the only one there. And you have a lot, especially when you play for Real Madrid, you have other stars. And Zidane has maybe like 30 guys that he has to choose between them, and make sure that he's going to pick the best team. And then you're going to say, no, I prefer not to play because he didn't pick me. What kind of professional player you are? I mean, Bale has a fantastic talent. He's a fantastic player. But I think when he's going to look backwards, you know, at the end of his career, I think he's going to maybe say that he missed something. He missed something because he won many things with Real Madrid. But, I mean, something is missing. And maybe it's the behavior. The pride of playing for Real Madrid is insulting the institution right now, and I think it's completely wrong. is completely wrong. I mean, the image of himself that he's giving to the world is a very bad one. I don't know if he's going to listen to us, but he has to change his way of thinking football quickly.
Right, let's move on then to Lyon and Juventus. Lyon with a 1-0 lead after the first leg. Frank, I'll come right back to you. We saw what Lyon did in the Coupe de Ligue against PSG. They pretty much shut them down entirely, not even a ton of chances for PSG. Why couldn't they just do that again?
Why not? I mean, it's possible. They had a fantastic game in the first leg, but it's such a long time ago. But you're right, against Paris Saint-Germain, I think they maybe deserved to win. Well, they didn't. They lost on penalty kicks at the end of after 2 hours. But yeah, they can do so. And I think Juventus is showing some weaknesses lately, and it's possible for Lyon, if they believe they can go for a miracle, why not, you know? But it's going to be hard, you know? I mean, we all know, I don't want to go back to cliche, where Italian teams, they know what to do in very critical situations. So Juventus will have the experience, will have the history of the Champions League, but everything is possible for Lyon, and I believe that they can surprise somebody, and well, Juventus in that case.
Don, we know Lyon is good at making a game ugly, if nothing else. That's what you expect in this one?
Oh, absolutely. They are not going to come out and try and play total football against Juventus. It's not going to happen. They're going to adopt exactly the same tactics. But there's two sides, when I think of in Europe over the last 3 or 4 years, that you can never, ever depend on. And Borussia Dortmund's one, because you never know who's going to beat them, and they can lose against anyone. And Lyon are the other ones. You know, whenever they play home or away, you can never guarantee when they play games in Ligue 1, you know, what the score is going to be, or even if they're going to get a result. And I can't depend on them beating Juve. The scoreline is either going to be 0-0 and they go through, or they get walloped 4-0. Because if they try those tactics and sit in, they're inviting loads of pressure. And then you bring Higuain, you bring Dybala, you bring Ronaldo into the game, and they, as we know, can open up any defence. So they've got to try and find a tactic, but it won't be going forward. It'll be pure defence all the way.
Ale, they're trailing. How worried are you about Juventus?
I am worried about Juventus. And it's not so much about whatever Lyon is going to do. It's merely just basing my opinion on what I've seen from Juventus since the restart. And it's a team that if you just took the uniform away and you took the crest away and it didn't say Juventus and you just watched them play since the restart, you think, well, there's some holes here. There's some frailties. There's some difficulties. And it's a team that at times can become very predictable in the attack and very Ronaldo-dependent. And so Dybala has to have a big game. If Higuain plays, then he has to have a big game. But in terms of Juventus as a whole, they have been underwhelming. And I know that's difficult to say when they just won the title for seemingly the 100th time. But it just, the sense what I get from Juventus is that they should be better than what they are. And that by now, Sarri should have a better idea as to what his best team is. That we are deep into the season. And I don't think that he has a real handle as to what the best version of Juventus looks like. And we rarely see that best version of Juventus. So we go back to Dybala has to have a good game. Higuain may have to have a big game. But most of all, this all becomes, again, Champions League, big stage, and Cristiano Ronaldo. It's a story that we've seen before, but if Juventus is going to go through, he's going to have to score a big goal, because I just don't think that anybody else on that team is going to provide the sort of productivity that they need.
It's the Sarri way, Sebi, isn't it, Ali and Frank? When you think of what Mauricio Sarri does, it's substance over style. You know, when he was at Chelsea, the Chelsea fans didn't really have an identity what Sarri was. He made them hard to watch when he had all those exciting players. He's got the same sort of players at Juve. And even at times, like Ali said, after the restart, they haven't been a particularly good side to watch. They stuttered towards the title. And with Sarri, you know, he's not going to let them just go and play. He's not going to set his team and say, right, go and fly and go and beat this Lyon side with loads of style. It will be a bit of a grind. So I think that's the problem. When you try and get a handle on what Sarri's style is, it's not particularly offensive. It's all about just getting the job done.
Guys, one more bit of Champions League news. Kylian Mbappe training on Thursday. Frank, we know everybody's got an eye on that ankle as PSG and Atalanta get set to meet next week. Do they need to risk him and play him against Atalanta?
Well, they need to respect Atalanta. Atalanta is a fantastic team, and showed during that competition that they can scare the bejesus off of anybody. So they have to again respect that team and make sure they put the best team. Well, if they line up Mbappe, it's because they think he's fit enough. If he's not, it's risky and completely useless. You only put a player on the field when you're 100% sure that it's going to be okay. So only Mbappe has the answer of that. If he feels, and now he's mature enough to say so, if he feels that he can play, he should play, because it's, of course, a plus for Paris Saint-Germain. If he's only 60-70%, no, stay on the bench, or even stay at the in the dressing room and get some treatment and make sure that you're going to be okay for the next game.
Ale, for all the money that PSG have spent, surely they'd be a massive favorite over Atalanta, even without Mbappe, yeah?
They would be a favorite, but this is about advancing. This is about doing what you need to do in order to make sure that you are further into this competition. And part of that for PSG is having their best players on the field. And Kylian Mbappe qualifies as one of their best players. So if he's anywhere near fit, if he's not hindering his health, if you're not risking the long-term possibility of what Kylian Mbappe can be for you, then I don't think there's any doubt that he plays, and I don't think there's any doubt that Kylian Mbappe would want to play. Unlike Gareth Bale, I assume that Kylian Mbappe would be ready to say, hey, I'm here, I'm ready, let's go, let's do this, my ankle is fine. It may not be perfect, but if he's anywhere near 80%, 90%, you put him out there, because 80% of Mbappe is better than anybody else's.
Don, PSG deep enough to have him afford to take a break?
I think so. I think the boys are right. You know, when you sort of look forward to these games and you have someone that's got a bit of a problem, which he has, I think Thomas Tuchel will probably lean towards putting Mbappe on the bench. And then if you then need him for the last 20 minutes of a game, if you're desperate, you know, for Tuchel, he'll be thinking, if the game goes well, we don't need to bring him on. We can give him that little bit more rest, and we can play him in when they go deep into the competition. That'll be the plan. I wouldn't have thought they'd start him from the first minute. It's not going to happen. But I think for PSG, they've got to try and exercise some demons that they've had in the Champions League over the last two or three years. At any given time, PSG are one of these sides where they throw a result in which you don't see happening, and it seems to have scarred them. But when you think of this game against Gasperini's Atalanta, I mean, the forward lines with Icardi, Di Maria and Neymar, Papu Gomez, Zapata, Muriel, you just think there has to be goals in this game. And it could literally be a toss of the coin. It could be a 50-50 game.
Thanks, guys. Great stuff. A reminder, join us for extra time. Frank, Don and Ale are all back as we take your questions off Twitter.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Come next season, the Premier League will instruct its officials for subjective calls to use the pitch side monitor. Don Hutchison back with us. Shaka Hislop joins the show as well. Shaka, about time.
Yeah, it is. I don't understand why the Premier League decided to employ their own set of protocols around VAR. I was part of some of the early meetings with IFAB in terms of FIFA's VAR protocol, which we saw work so well in the 2018 World Cup. Yet the Premier League wanted to go their own way and trial their own set of rules. And quite frankly, by comparison, it was a disaster. But finally, they've seen the error of their own ways and adopting a more unified approach, which goes with what everybody else has been doing and has worked so successfully elsewhere.
More news. The Premier League reportedly considering doing away with the infamous offside line that we see on broadcast. Don, apparently people don't like the offside line. Do you have a problem with it?
Not really, no, because it's sort of factual, isn't it? I mean, it's one of the things when you watch VAR, it's actually factual when you see someone offside. Now, I don't know what you do, what the protocol is going to be. If the line's not there, you're just going to go off human eye, and you know, then it's a difficult one. I didn't actually mind it, but I'm quite open-minded, and I think the season that we've had with VAR being in the Premier League, it was a brand new baby for the Premier League. Then we had obviously the pandemic, and then we come back again. So there was lots of disruption to the Premier League. So I guess the Premier League guys were just trying to get the season out of the way, and then obviously change one or two laws, and maybe look at one or two laws going into next season. So I think they're doing absolutely the right thing.
Shaka, all we ever hear from people is that they want more transparency. Taking that line away would seem to be a step away from that.
Well, I'm not quite sure. And listen, I was following Dale Johnson, and he was tweeting about it earlier today. And he seemed to suggest that what they're going to use is what we've seen FIFA and other leagues in Europe use, and just publish the final version of the photo, where you have the two lines, one line for the defender, one for the attacker, and the last line, as it were. So they're doing away with the moving crosshairs and showing how it's lining up on with the shoulder and with the big toe. That moving crosshairs and moving lines, I think made things seem longer in deciding the final version in the end. And for me, took away from the experience from the viewer. Just show what you come up with at the end and why your decision is what it is.
It's one of them, Shaq, isn't it? When they were drawing all the lines on, Sebi, when they were drawing all the lines and getting them to the millimetre, it was almost like it was trying to be too precise, if that's not a contradiction. And as Shaka said, if you've just got the two lines, offside, onside, and then we can all deal with that, and then we trust the process and we trust what we see at the end of it, then we go, oh, okay, he's 6 inches offside. Absolutely fine, we'll go with that. But when it was all being drawn on, and you know, the height line as well, it was always trying to be really, really too precise.
Guys, another big decision: Premier League clubs voting to go back to 3 subs from 5 subs next season. Shaka, the right choice?
I think so. I understand why it was moved to 5 subs because of the pandemic and the league having to shut down. You also wanted to protect players from a health perspective, given the fact that they're coming back into the thick of a league without really a preseason. So it made sense in the short term. Whether we have this discussion again about moving to 4 substitutes or 5 or any changes around that substitute number, those discussions have to be had and over a longer period. So you understand why it's gone back to 3. That makes sense. But again, maybe we'll have the same discussion again in weeks or months to come. But that's a longer-term discussion.
Don, it's being hailed as a victory for smaller clubs that don't have the deep squads. You see it that way?
I do, because you know, when you're watching the Premier League games unfold towards the end of the season, and Shaq is right, you understand it with the players not being 100% fit. I could understand, and it was actually a good law when it came in that we were trying to give the players enough chance and enough game time for the 5 subs. But it did sort of favour the bigger sides. The bigger side, i.e., Liverpool and Man United and Man City, the teams with the biggest of squads, if they were chasing a result with 20, 30 minutes to go, they could look to their bench and bring on top quality players, where the teams who haven't got those finances and deeper squads couldn't. So I think it's a more level playing field and obviously when it goes back to 3 subs, I think that's the right call.
Great stuff, guys. ESPN FC returns to your screens Friday. Boys will be back, looking back on all the Champions League action. Do not miss it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Alexis Sanchez's nightmare at Old Trafford is over, the Chilean finalizing his move to Inter Milan. Manchester United having to cancel the last 2 years of his contract as he goes on a free. Was making $400,000 a week, which is just about the combined rate for Don, Shaka, and Frank. Shaka, yeah. You okay. Are the resident expert in power rankings. Where would you rank Alexis Sanchez and Manchester United on the all-time flop list?
Oh, man, it would be right up there. I'm not sure. I can't think of anybody who's had a lower return and at the same time commanded as high a salary. Even if you take time into consideration and what the money in the game is like today. Alexis Sanchez, for what Manchester United paid, and I think have hamstrung their way in a way... Oh, they'll have to pay star players coming through the doors. No, the return could not be any worse. This spell couldn't be any more disastrous.
Frank, how do you explain it? This was a player that was very effective. Then he goes to Manchester United and it almost immediately stops. Is it on the player or the club?
Well, I think it's sometimes you make choices and also you go through injuries makes you going down and down and down in your games and in your performances. So it's hard to say who's responsible for that. It's maybe the misluck or I don't know, something happened in your life where you make wrong choices. I think when he was in Barcelona, everything went well. Then he decided to go to Arsenal where, in fact, the level was much lower than Barcelona at the time. Arsenal lost almost everything. And he played and he did very well for the Gunners, but being almost alone and not getting anything from there, where he was winning everything with Barcelona. Then, because also for the money, because I think he went to Arsenal also for money, went to Manchester United, where Manchester United was maybe, from maybe the whole history of Manchester United, the club where nobody wanted to go at that time. He decided to go there and again won nothing, but on top of it got injured, and then started the nightmare for him. So I think in your life you have to make good choices. You know, we saw Fernando Torres being fantastic in Liverpool and going to Chelsea and becoming a nightmare for everybody, for the club, for himself, and for the fans. And that's what it is. It's part of your career. You have to make good choices to make sure that the club that you're going to go to is going to suit all your ideas about football, all your expectations, and it's not what happened to Alexis Sanchez. You know, unfortunately.
Don, United were desperate to get rid of this player. How much does he actually help Inter Milan?
He's actually done quite well, but it's quite ironic, really, that Man United were actually desperate to get him, because when he was in talks with Man City and Man United, I think Guardiola was desperate for him, and he went for talks to Man City, and Pep told him what he was going to do with him, what his plans were, what he was actually going to win, what silverware he was going to try and win. And then he was trying to hike his own wages up, and Guardiola and Man City just went, look, if it's money you're after, you can go across the road. And he went to Man United and had an absolute nightmare. And Frank's right, it's all about choices. And I think when he retires, Alexis Sanchez, he'll look back at that moment and he'll probably think, I should have took a different path. But now he's got a different challenge in Italy, and he's at the right club with the right manager, and Antonio Conte, who seems to have more or less built a side around him, even though he's only been there for a short period of time, because he's guaranteed in football. He looks fitter. He looks as though he's eaten well. He looks a little bit slimmer as well. He's quite a powerful player. And you can see in his performances, he's lasting 90 minutes, where when he was at United, he was always chasing the 90 minutes. He was always chasing his fitness. So I think you'll see a different player at Inter.
Shaka reports that Sanchez took a pay cut to make this happen. Put yourself in his shoes. Would you have taken a pay cut?
Yeah, I think he had to. Nobody's going to pick up Alexis Sanchez on the kind of wages that he was at Manchester United. I'll go so far as to say I strongly suspect that Manchester United are still paying a little bit of towards Alexis Sanchez. that's my dog barking there.
Is the dog on $400,000 a week?
He wants his money,
Shaq. He doesn't want to cut your wage. He says, don't cut your wage. Where's my food?
Don, does it change your idea of Alexis Sanchez at all, that he's willing to take a pay cut? Because we see, and it's not the same, but somewhat similar situations with Gareth Bale. We just talked about that, and even Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, no, it does. It tells you a lot about the player. I mean, listen, we're talking about astronomical numbers where he's on approximately, you know, £500,000 a week at Man United. So see, it is actually quite easy then to take a pay cut to, like, say, 250 or 300. So they are, you know, ridiculous figures. But it tells me about Alexis Sanchez that I like. I like that in him. I like the human side of him where, you know, money now is not the most important thing, even though he's got enough of it. He wants to go and play. And he's certainly enjoyed himself since he's been at Inter. You could see that in his performances. But I like that. I'd rather see an Alexis Sanchez, you know, busting the gut, looking fit, being a professional, than just staying at Man United, just picking up an easy check.
Frank, what would you do? Take the easy check?
I never thought, I mean, money is important and you need money to have a nice life, but it cannot be the motor of the engine of your life. I mean, I did that at the end of my career when I went to Qatar because I thought that I didn't think enough about it. But I thought about football. I only thought about playing for a club with a common interest, and it's what I did. And that money was a plus. And even if he cuts his wage, half of it, you know, I mean, he missed something. He missed something when he didn't sign for the right club or when he didn't stay to Barcelona. I don't know. I mean, he made wrong choices coming first to Arsenal because he couldn't win anything, even if he played very well, and signed for Manchester United for money. And now, okay, oh, now I have to think about football. I have enough money, now I can think about football. No, I'm sorry. For me, it's too late. And as Dan said, you know, when he's going to look backwards at the end of his career, I'm not sure he's going to be very happy. Of course, now he has no other choices of saying, okay, I want to play, so I'm going to cut my wage, even if it's half of what I used to earn. But yeah, it's good. I'm with a fantastic club, Inter Milan, and I can win stuff. But for me, it's already too late.
Speaking of looking back at the end of your career, how about Mario Balotelli? Now linked to Cluj, the Romanian champions, would be his fourth team in the last four seasons. Shaka, we've seen Balotelli all over. I had begged that Major League Soccer would bring him back. What do you think? Is Romania the place for Balotelli to experience a rebirth?
I'm not at all sure. And listen, I sympathize with Cluj in taking a chance on Balotelli, given the talent that he once showed that he could be. The trouble for me is, and I said this when we were talking about Balotelli coming to MLS, I just think he's more hassle than he's worth. I don't see why anybody takes a chance on Balotelli even now, and that's coming from someone who has been one of his biggest fans during the bigger part of his career. But I think he's broken too many hearts, including my own, to justify somebody taking a chance.
Frank, Dan Petrescu, the manager at Cluj, one of your former mates at Chelsea. What do you think he sees in Balotelli?
I don't know. I should have called him before. I'm completely with Shaka. I think what he did in his career is just a waste. I mean, I saw him coming to Nice doing great, and I say, okay, it's kind of a redemption. He's back to what he does, the best, football. He thinks about football. He sleeps football. And again, it went the wrong way. He went back to his former club, family club, Brescia, but didn't do well at all, even upsetting the coach and his teammates. Now he's at Cluj. I don't know why Dan Petrescu chose him and what he thinks about him. Maybe he's not aware of the personality of the person. I think, again, you have to take responsibility for your acts. And at some point, no clubs around the world will want you because you've done too many damages around you. And he hasn't won last chances. Well, hopefully he's going to take it. Hopefully Dan Petrescu will change him or will put him back to who he was. But I really doubt about it.
Don, he's still 29 years old. At all worth the risk?
Listen, it's a difficult one because he's a player that I sort of feel sorry for. And I mean that genuinely because I know there's a good heart in Balotelli. Everyone that tells me who's been in the same dressing room and shared dressing rooms with him have all said, you know, he's the life and soul of a dressing room. He's got a really good heart. He's quite soft and gentle. But as Shaka said and Frank said, he breaks too many hearts. He consistently lets you down. When you want him to do well and when he's had the amount of clubs that he's had, you know, at some point, Sebi, you have to look in the mirror. If it's not going well and you've had so many clubs and, you know, Brescia's been the latest where they actually locked the training gates and wouldn't let him in, which is a really sad story in itself. You've then got two options. You can blame everyone around you. You can blame the managers, all the managers that you might say have not been a good fit for me. Or you can do the right thing and actually look in the mirror and say, well, is it my fault? And if you've had that many clubs and broken that many hearts, well, then it has to be. So at his age at 29, he's still got time to change. That's the one thing I would say. If Dan Petrescu can try and put an arm around him and protect him and build a team around him and tell him the world's great and give him all the football that he needs, and hopefully for Balotelli's case, it works. But it's one of these where you just think if you tried to manage him, you'd be walking on eggshells, you'd be tippy-toeing around him, and then you're not quite sure if it's all going to work. I suspect it's probably going to end in tears.
Thanks, guys. Another reminder, if you ever miss the visual episode of a show, you just got to check out the podcast. Audio episodes always available over on the website. Plenty bonus material on the podcast as well.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Quarterfinal field set then in the Europa League after Thursday's action. Bayer Leverkusen, Wolves, Sevilla, FC Basel all punching their ticket through to the next round. Wolves, by the way, courtesy of a penalty kick from none other than Raul Jimenez. All right, that'll do it for this edition of ESPN FC. Now, though, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. Extra time featuring Don, Ale, and Frank. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We got Frank, Don, and Alejandro with us. Plus, we have your questions via Twitter. Guys, last night, ESPN showed virtual Lil Wayne Weezy watching the Lakers-Thunders game in the crowd. Really want to hear Sebi say Lil Weezy. Lil Weezy. You guys ever notice a celebrity in the crowd during a match? Walking to the pitch, sitting on the bench, taking a corner, etc. Don, any celebrity sightings for you?
Yeah, there's been quite a few. Daniel Craig, James Bond as a Liverpool fan. I think Clive Owen as another Liverpool fan. But back in my day when I was playing in the early 90s, we had a Scouse comedian called Jimmy Tarbuck, who was a massive Red. And he used to come down to the dressing room and crack a few jokes and tell a few stories. And the boys absolutely loved him. It's actually, bizarrely, it's actually quite a regular occurrence.
Frank, I'd imagine celebrities were coming up to you looking to get their pictures taken.
That is funny that I'm very fond of actors, and when I was playing and I was looking for people from the movie industry coming to Chelsea, and we had one, and very famous one, you know, really belonging to the family of Chelsea. It was Sir Attenborough, who played in Jurassic Park, for example, and he was always in the presidential stand, and we always talked together, and it was very, very It was a big honor for me to talk to him. And I remember one game I played with Hollywood FC where we had lots of stars like Owen Wilson, for example, and some others like Anthony LaPaglia. We played some games, and we played games against LA Galaxy of David Beckham for the fires in Australia. And I remember one time during the game, I think we lost like 5-2, but I scored two goals. And I heard somebody saying, give the ball to Frank in that team. That's the only one who can play football, for God's sake. And and I asked, who say that? Supposedly, I'm not sure, I can't confirm, it was Robert Downey Jr. So I wish I could have talked to him after that, because I'm a big fan of him. And Iron Man is one of my best comic movie. But yeah, you know, so many people that we met. Remember that at Stamford Bridge, I played against David Beckham. And that day was the day he met Posh. And on top of it, I think he won that game.
Ale, I want to ask about your celebrities, but can you break down Frank's humble brag first?
No, I mean, we asked Frank about the celebrities that he had seen in the stadium to come and watch his teams play and watch him play. And somehow he turned that around into celebrities asking about him and how good of a player he was. And Robert Downey Jr.
What can I do?
And oh my goodness, hey, are you sure you're not Iron Man yourself, Frank? I think you're Iron Man.
No, we've seen enough of Iron Man, thanks to Dan Thomas's Twitter.
I could be. They made the wrong choice in that movie. They made the wrong choice. I should have been Iron Man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I should have been. No, hey, Mr. Bridget, you know, with the
Don't forget, Seth and Frank, he also made himself into Cupid, because he said, you know, this is when David Beckham met Posh. It was really because they came and watched me play.
She hesitated. She didn't know who to choose. She chose Beckham. I think she made a mistake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Yeah. Just like
that's my point of view.
Well.
Yeah. Just like it was. Just like it was a mistake.
You're talking about money, Ali.
Robert
you're talking
Downey
about
Jr.
money.
In Iron Man, I'm sure the box office receipts reflect that. Dan the Orange Man asks, will Højbjerg's transfer to Tottenham, Pierre-Emile from Southampton, solve Mourinho's midfield woes? Is this a good bit of business for Spurs, Don?
I think it's a good bit of business, but it's not going to make Tottenham into a top four side or challenge for the title. It's going to stiffen their midfield up. And you think of people like Sissoko, who is a very good athlete and go box to box and had a very, very good 18 months. And Harry Winks, who's technically very good, but he can only, his passing range is quite limited. He's only a sort of 10, 15 yard, 20 yard pass of the ball. So he'll certainly get around the pitch, Højbjerg. He'll put his foot in, which Jose will absolutely love, and Tottenham fans will like that because he's very combative. But in terms of, if it's just one signing, and Tottenham fans are thinking this is a signing that's going to get us into the top four, nowhere near.
That's it, Frank. Isn't what Don says correct? Spurs still a long way off?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Spurs still a long way off, even if they do land Højbjerg, yeah?
I don't know. I'm not sure that Mourinho will be the best coach ever, you know, to make sure that Spurs can improve their standards and all competition that they're going to be involved in. I don't know what I can think about Spurs for the next season, because I think lots of work has to be done. They missed the real spot when they played the Champions League final. Now they have slack. They have to rebuild almost everything to go back to their fame, and which is quite a shame, because it was such not a long time ago that they were successful, and now it's like they already lost everything.
Ale, what do you think about Spurs' future?
I think it's going to be more of the same. I don't think they really take a huge leap forward. I believe that there are a number of teams ahead of them that will remain ahead of them that are not going back to Spurs. So Manchester United has taken a step forward. Chelsea has taken a step forward. And then, of course, you think of Liverpool and Manchester City. And so there is no space there for Spurs. And if they're not careful, Arsenal may just take a step forward as well. And so I really think where they are is probably where they belong. And I don't know how much better it can get for Spurs right now.
Frank, Eduardo Camavinga or Ricky Pouche, which next generation midfielder has a brighter future ahead of him?
I think Ricky Pouche plays already for a fantastic team, Barcelona, and he has a bright future. And we all saw him during the end of the Liga doing great, even if he's not always, well, rarely in the first 11. We can see that he has everything to be the next maybe Xavi or maybe the next Iniesta, hopefully for him. But Camavinga is a monster. He's very, very strong, already mature. It makes me think of Ruud Gullit. Of course, he has to take a little bit of stamina to and power to make sure that he will be like Ruud Gullit. But he has everything to become one of the bigger, stronger midfielder in the world. That's for sure.
Don, Ricky Pouche as the next Iniesta or Xavi. What do you think?
I think that's a good shout from Frank. I think he's the type of player that when he plays the game, it looks as though the game's very easy. It comes to him quite naturally. He doesn't have to work too much. He's obviously got to work on his game because when you're young, you need to develop and you need to develop your skills and hone them in. But in terms of when you're watching him play, you know, when you're playing in that position, you're always taught to take the ball on the back foot and look for a forward pass. His passing range is quite good. And if he gets anywhere near, you know, those two guys that Frank have mentioned, and Iniesta and Xavi, he'll have a stellar career because they were two of the very, very best.
Ale, should Barcelona sign Eric Garcia, the 19-year-old centre back currently on the books at City?
Yes. Yes. Short answer, yes. Long answer, yes. Barcelona needs players that can help out that back line. Barcelona needs options in the back line and a guy who can play out of the back. And Garcia has shown that if you're going to play for Pep Guardiola, you have to have that skill set. He still needs to grow. He still needs to mature. But in terms of taking a chance on a player and be a player that could potentially be very useful to you right away, I think, yes, no doubt about it, Eric Garcia should be that player for Barcelona.
Frank, another scouting report question for you. Can you tell us about the former Ligue 1 and current Brentford player, Benrahma? Is he ready for a big move to the Premier League? Of course, we saw him in the promotion playoff. What do you think, Frank?
Well, we saw so many players, French players, coming to Premier League, and some in France we say they have been stolen from the Ligue 1, but it's what we know and it's what we see every time, and we expect every time we see a player getting better and better that the Premier League will come up and will steal a player for belonging to it. And the Ligue 1 is a good level. It's not a top level, and we can see that Paris Saint-Germain, with all the stars, they're ruining all suspenses every year. But it's a good, let's say, I don't want to be too harsh on it, but it's a very good academy. We have good academies. We bring the players to their maturity, but we serve Europe and the best championship for that. But every players from the Ligue 1 mostly did well when he went abroad and served any Premier League club.
Don, what do you think of Benrahma? Is he a Premier League player?
I think he is. I think Thomas Frank at Brentford's done a terrific job bringing him on. I'd not seen him play before he came to Brentford, and he looks as a fantastic player. He's quite anonymous in the playoff final. He didn't have a good game. But you could still see little flashes, you know, when he plays on that left-hand side and he can go to the byline. But once he chops inside on his right foot, he's got that shot where he whips it towards the top corner. So it'll be a shame for Brentford moving into their new stadium that they don't keep hold of him. But when I looked at the majority of them players, he was the one that sort of stood out for me, where I think if someone from the Premier League wants to take a chance on someone from the Championship, Benrahma would be the one.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. That's it for this edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. Don't miss tomorrow's show. The guys are all over the Champions League doubleheader.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is... Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.